You may be seated. Now we're going to jump ahead to chapter 28, and we're going to tell that story I alluded to in the children's time. Jacob left Beersheba and went towards Haran. He came to a certain place and stayed there for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones of the place, he put it under his head and lay down in that place. And he dreamed that there was a ladder set on the earth, the top of it reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And the Lord stood beside him and said, I am the Lord, the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac, the land on which you lie, I will give to you and your offspring. And your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. And all the families of the earth shall be blessed in you and in your offspring. Know that I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. Then Jacob woke up from his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. And he was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. So Jacob rose early in the morning, and he took the stone that he had put under his head and set it up for a pillar and poured oil on the top of it. He called that place Bethel, but the name of the city was Luz at first. Then Jacob made a vow, saying, if God will be with me and will keep me in the way that I go and will give me bread to eat and clothing to wear so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God, and this stone which I have set up for a pillar shall be God's house. And of all that you give me, I will surely give one-tenth to you. Friends, this is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So last week, we spent some time in the Psalms and encountered God's opinion that we don't really give anything to God because it's all God's anyway. I had a farmer in my first call who said that you can't really start talking about giving to God until you're after 10% because that's what's required. And these passages are where that 10% piece kind of comes from. Now, Abraham is a tough character. He picks up and moves from Ur of the Chaldees to the Promised Land. He and his wife, Sarah, have a baby in their 90s. They have lots of great stories. This story comes in after most of those stories. And Abram has led an army out and won a battle. Probably a battle they shouldn't really have won. And he's come back, and they're in this valley, and there's a king, there's two kings who meet him. Melchizedek is one, and there's this other king there. And the dialogue is fascinating, partly because you need to know something about King Melchizedek. He's weird. Because he only appears twice in the Bible. He appears in this passage, and he appears in a description of Jesus Christ, who is a high priest after the order of Melchizedek. And if you know your Hebrew, as all of you do, Melchizedek is expanded out. It's a combination of two words. It is the king of righteousness, the king of holiness. Melech, king. Tzaddik. Zedek, righteousness. So when we describe the Lord your God as righteous, overflowing with steadfast love, slow to anger, that's that righteousness in there is the Zedek part of Melchizedek. And he's the king of Salem, which in Hebrew is written as Shalom. He's the king of peace. Okay, so he's kind of an interesting character. And he comes out and he renews the covenant and the promise of God to Abram. You heard that in his prayer. And the connection between God and Abram is renewed by this guy who only shows up twice in the whole Bible. And then there's this other king there who's like, now let's talk about cash. Give me stuff. And Abram has an interesting response to him. He says, no, I'm going to pay you exactly what you're owed because I don't want you talking about me later. I don't want you to be able to say that you enriched me, that I got rich because of you. I don't want you to be able to say that you had any part of my success when we all know it's all God. That's the unpacking of that little bit. And then Abram gives 1/10 of everything to God through King Melchizedek. Abram is doing what is probably the easier thing to do by faith, but the harder thing to do in reality. He's giving after it's been earned. Okay? So the victory has been won. What God has promised has been given him. He is late. I mean, Abraham is always late in life in the Bible. He is never a spring chicken. He's moving in his 60s. He's having babies in his 90s. I mean, this is 6 chapters after Isaac is born. So he's not young to be leading an army in battle. And he's seen the promises paid out. He has held his son. He has challenged a God about the destruction of the city of Sodom. And he has won battle and seen God deliver him and his army from a battle they probably shouldn't have won. And now he's actually putting his money where his mouth was. And you know that's often the challenge with us, is we make big promises and we have little teeny bits of follow through. Abram gives because he is thankful and because he has had an encounter with God that leaves no question about who is directing his life. And that is part of why he turns down the king of Sodom. Abram knows where his life has been transformed and where that power comes from. And it's not from the guy who brought lunch. Remember, that's what Abram says he's going to pay him for, is for all the food that we ate. I'll pay you for lunch, but I'm not giving you anything else. Abram knows where his success, where his fortune, and I don't mean luck, I do mean his wealth, comes from. And he is recognizing that. There is often a temptation for us to believe that we did it. There's a great joke about a guy who is praying. He's out of work and he's been looking for work and he's praying really hard, Lord, I need a job. I've been on all these interviews, I've been out. Help me out. Phone rings. In the middle of his prayer, he gets up, he answers the phone. It's somebody who offers him a job. He, of course, accepts it. Hangs up the phone, gets back down on his knees and said, thanks, Lord, I took care of it myself. And we're all laughing because we've all sort of done it. Abram doesn't do that. He's actually able to say, and repeatedly say, that God has done these things, that God has transformed his life. And he has the huge advantage that it's really obvious. He has a son that he sees every day as a reminder of a God who does the impossible. He has come through battle. he has this huge promise in front of him that he believes is going to happen because he's seen all the little pieces of it start to happen. And so Abraham is giving a little bit out of thanks, but more out of an understanding of the relationship, that it came from God, so it goes back to God. It's not really his. It's a gift from God. Now, in a generation or two, we're going to forget some of this stuff, and we're going to jump ahead to Jacob. You guys remember Jacob? He's a wonderful scalawag. In this passage, he is the beloved scalawag who has been sent away before Esau kills him to go find a wife from his extended family. So he's on his way to look for Rachel, and he stops for the night and takes a nap, rests overnight on the comfortable early version of the Serta Easy Sleeper pillow. And he has a vision. Now, this is a pretty profound vision. We tend to boil this vision down to the Jacob's Ladder thing, which then becomes the basis for Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven. I'm not kidding. That's actually it. And we forget that God goes on a long monologue in this passage about the things that are going to happen. Your family will be as numerous as dust on the earth. And if you have ever cleaned your house, you know that dust is a pretty numerous thing. I'm going to read it to you again. First of all, the Lord stands before him and says, I am the Lord, the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give to you and your offspring. Your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth. You shall spread abroad to the west and the east and the north and the south, and all the families of the earth shall be blessed in you and in your offspring. Know that I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I promised you. That's an awful lot to get broken down into a Far Side cartoon that has angels on a ladder. And if we just remember the ladder, we've forgotten the power of the story. So God shows up and reminds Jacob of the relationship. I'm the God of Abraham and the God of Isaac, and I'm your God. I was your pappy's God. I was your grandpappy's God. And your family is going to be huge. You're going to be north, south, east, west. You're going to be like dust on the face of the earth. And I will go with you. Remember that he has been run out of town, essentially. His parents have shipped him off so his older brother doesn't kill him. And that is a real risk because he has stolen his older brother's birthright and his older brother's blessing. He is not a nice guy. And so he is on his way to eventually get to see Lot and meet Rachel and get conned himself into marrying two women and not one. And that's another story for another day. You can read it if you'd like. It's in your book. Now, Jacob's response is fascinating. Now, surely, this is a powerful place. God was here and I didn't know it, and I'm going to stand up my stone, and I'm going to anoint it, and I'm going to call the place Bethel, which literally does mean the house of God. And then he turns into us. Then Jacob made a vow. If God will be with me, and will keep me in the way that I go, and will give me bread to eat and clothing to wear, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God, and this stone which I have set up a pillar shall be God's house, and all that you give me, I will surely give one tenth to you. If. Have you ever prayed a prayer that started with if? And this is also why we give. We attempt to do a little low-grade bribery of the God of creation. And I mean, if we would think about this for a minute, we would realize, seriously, what are we going to bribe God with? What do we have? Like, if I put a 20 in the plate, is that good enough for three miracles, God? Like, that's enough. The people in the Bible, they are us, we are them. God uses imperfect people. So after God himself has appeared to Jacob and said, here's the deal, Jacob is still not sure it's going to happen. Really, Jacob? God appeared to you and gave you this promise, and then you woke up and said, this is a dangerous place. God shows up here. You have the thought that the next thing you ought to do is make it conditional. That if God does all these things that God has promised, you will do this little bit. Oh, and so if you do this, God, if you see me safely, if you keep me fed, if you keep me clothed, if you bring me safely back home, I'll give you 10 cents on the dollar, God. Jacob's a cheapskate. He might be a used car salesman. But that's often how we still work, too, even though we've had this story as the people of God for nearly 3,000 years. We still get conditional with God. Because even though God assumes the relationship, I'm the God of Abraham, I'm the God of Isaac, and I'm your God. I'm the God of your family, I'm the God of your fathers, and the God of your mothers. Jacob doesn't seem to know who God is. So he makes his relationship conditional on God showing up, even after God shows up. We do that sometimes too. Hey God, if you do this for me, I will. Right? Have you ever prayed one of those prayers? So God, Dad's got cancer. If you cure him, we'll do this, right? When we're little, we ask for different things in our prayers. Ponies, snow, birthday cakes. When we get older, we get grander. God, if you see my child through this time, I will. Right? Ever prayed one of those? And maybe 10 cents on the dollar too, Lord. Maybe 10 cents on the dollar. As a pastor, one of the fun things I get to do is I get called on by people in the community when they have no attachment to the church. They sort of have a vague attachment to this Jesus character, but they don't know where to find him, so they think they can find him here. So they call me. And in my first call, what that looked like was funerals. It looked like 92 funerals in 4.5 years. It looked like 21 funerals in 2013, of which 4 were church members. And occasionally it looked like people who got demanding about it. But one of the things I learned about was about prayers like this, because they would be so happy to have me show up and be Jesus that they would promise me, Pastor, that they would be in church next Sunday. And it has been 16 years for some of them, and I have not seen them on next Sunday yet. And I think that's how some of our prayers to God go too. That God shows up, and we make our promise, and then we bail on it. Because the relationship isn't there. Abram has a huge advantage. I mean, Abram has had God over for dinner on multiple occasions. It's in the Bible. You can look it up. It's in Genesis 17 and 18. Abram's wife has laughed at the promises of God. You got to be pretty good friends before you can laugh at somebody making a promise, right? Abram went on a 3-day journey to sacrifice his child. I don't know about you, but we got to be really close before we consider sacrificing my child on your behalf. So Abram has a relationship, and when he comes to this point in his life, he has done the things without knowing the answer enough times that he has learned the answer. We start off with Abram. We encounter him. He's from a great town named Ur. Ur. Ur of the Chaldees. And if you ever look up a Bible map, if this is Israel and this is the Mediterranean, Ur is somewhere about right here. Arabia, Iran, Iraq, it's like a 700-mile journey. And he picks up and goes because God says, move and I'll tell you when to stop. Abram has already gotten past the point of wondering, as Jacob wonders, is God going to be there? Jacob isn't there yet. Now, if Jacob could critically look at his life, the fact that he is still alive at this point in Scripture is a sign that God loves him. Because in a lot of households, he would have been dead and buried in the ditch in the back 40. But he doesn't have that relationship, so he makes his gift to God contingent on what God might do. And that is the challenge for us. Are we in Abram's shoes or are we in Jacob's shoes? Do we have enough of a relationship that we trust the God who is to do what he said he's going to do? Or after a 3-minute stump speech, do we still want to go, well, that's great, when I see some proof of that, we'll talk? Jacob has God wake him up in the middle of the night, and he's still not sure God is real. Imagine that. As we do everything we do as the church, part of our challenge is being the church that conveys the faith of Abraham to just 2 generations later. I mean, that is the arc of this story. We're still in one family. Jacob's father is Isaac. He is the promise. And let me tell you, that story's probably been told. How many of you have family stories that you have heard way too many times? But it isn't real to Jacob. His father is living proof of the truth of the promises to God, and it somehow has not dented his thick skull. Think about that for a moment. That is ultimately the challenge for the people of God, is to pass along that real living faith through multiple generations, even when we think it should be obvious, because they're right there at the dinner table. And that is how we get to giving, because we're in a relationship with God. Not always a perfect relationship. God moves awfully slowly sometimes. Have you noticed that? Not nearly as fast as I would have God move. Often gets it done much better than I would do it myself. Huh, funny thing that. I'm still impatient. God is still patient with me. There are lots of things that we do on a contingency basis. We get very skeptical. I'll believe it when I see it. Well, they've done this before. They've said that before. Our history with God should be sufficient to tell us that God tells the truth and that God follows through. Abraham is acting out of a lived experience of that, that somehow has not gotten into the water that Jacob is drinking. Jacob will get there. He's got a lot of hard knocks to get yet. We, with the benefit of telling this story for 3 millennia, should hopefully be able to learn from some of their mistakes. We give simply because God gave first. We give because we're in a relationship with God. And we know that what we have is already a gift. To God alone be the glory this day and forevermore. Amen.